Hey, this is Leisha.
And this is Juliet.
And welcome back to Screen Tea Podcast. Second time we recorded this intro because I forgot what our podcast was called. Welcome.
Jesus.
This should be fun. This should be fun. I'm really excited about today's movie.
You're going to hear us argue.
Really?
But not really. Just about the thing that we've already discussed.
Oh, we're going to argue about that?
No, nothing more than what we've already done. It's just a continuation of our debate.
We're debating?
About the ending?
We're on the opposite side?
Sure.
Huh. Okay. I feel like we should start over a third time. Should we?
No.
Okay. Welcome to Screen Tea Podcast, where I'm fighting with my wife and didn't know.
It's a discussion.
I just didn't know we were on opposite sides of the discussion, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so last week we talked about a real shitty sci-fi movie. This week we're not. really excited to share that we are also drinking some extra special delicious tea tonight because I try to be a good wife and I got Jules a...
You're implying that I'm a shit wife.
No, I just implied that I was a shit wife trying to be a good wife.
You're always a good wife.
Oh my gosh, this is it. This is the episode you're hearing us break down in real time as we are entering week 7056 of quarantine. I got Jules a monthly subscription, like a monthly tea subscription that gets delivered to the house, and we have some new delicious teas.
Mm-hmm.
What are you drinking?
I am drinking vanilla apple hibiscus.
And it's delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And I am drinking rose Earl Grey because I need caffeine at 9 p.m. And mine is also really delicious.
Yeah, they're both good.
And mine's super cool. It doesn't come in any kind of container. It's a drop. A tea drop?
Mm-hmm. We did it wrong, but still neat.
Yeah, I was supposed to, as the name would imply, drop the tea drop in the water. Instead, I put it in the bottom and then filled it, but it's still yummy. So yeah, this is really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, new tea, good movie, which is really cool. Before we jump into it, just a reminder to go check out watershedvoice.com for us. And another thank you for featuring us on their website.
Yes.
So, we're covering. I'm really big on lists.
I know.
And I'm really big on what's the thing? Rank ordering things.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my... fourth favorite movie of all time.
I think you said fifth the other day.
I think I did too. What am I missing? One, two.
It's my second favorite movie behind Shaun of the Dead. Mine's an easy list.
Why am I blanking?
I don't know. We're off to another good start tonight.
Yeah, if you're still here.
Sorry.
And thank you. No, I'm pretty sure that this is my...
Okay. I mean, I'm not going to argue.
Anyways, this is in my top five. I'm going to have a meltdown about this later. Yes, today we are covering the movie Arrival. We're covering good sci-fi tonight that I'm not going to scream about every 3 seconds, I promise.
Covering a great movie.
Yes. Arrival was released November 11th, 2016. It was directed by Denis Villeneuve, whose other notable films include Prisoners, amazing, Sicario, and Blade Runner 2049. Arrival is written by, the screenplay was written by Eric Heisserer, fuck, Eric, you're great. It was based on a short story called Story of Your Life, which was written by Ted Chiang. Eric Heisserer's other notable film credits are 2010's The Nightmare on Elm Street, Bird Box, and Bloodshot. This film, Arrival, was produced by Lava Bear Films, Film Nation Entertainment, 21 Laps Entertainment, and the copyright holder is Xenolinguistics. Some individual producers are, big inhale here, and just God bless every one of you. This was not a major company production, so I just really want to give props to everyone who had a hand in making sure that this film happened the way that it did. So produced by Paul Barbo, Dan Cohen, Eric Heisserer, Martin Henry, Michael Jackman, Dan Levine, Sean Levy, David Lindy, Karen Lunder, Tori Metzger, Milan Popelka, Aaron Ryder, Stan Wilkowski, and Glenn Basner.
Our cinematographer for tonight is Bradford Young. He is known for Selena.
Nope, you fucked that up.
Selena, Selma, Solo, Star Wars Story, and When They See Us, the miniseries. That's two good things and one bad thing. It was edited by Joe Walker. He's known for 12 Years a Slave, Sicario, and Widows. And the soundtrack and composing was done by Johan Johansson? I can't read. He's also known for Prisoners, Theory of Everything, as well as The Butcher, The Whore, and The One-Eyed Man. Mm-hmm. Seems like it could be a song and really catchy, too.
You know who could sing it? Mm-hmm. Joey Beatty could sing it.
Okay.
Sorry.
This was starring the wonderful Amy Adams, who plays Louise Banks. She's known for Enchanted, Doubt, and the TV show Sharp Objects. Jeremy Renner as Ian Donnelly. He's known for The Hurt Locker, Wind River, and he's also the MCU's Clint Barton / Hawkeye. We also have Forrest Whitaker, who plays Colonel Weber. Could not remember his last name when I was writing.
Weber.
Yeah. He's known for the TV show The Shield, Lee Daniels' The Butler, and Black Panther. And then we have Michael Strolberg, who plays Agent Halpern. I also couldn't remember his name either. He's known for Boardwalk Empire, which is a TV show, Call Me By Your Name, as well as The Shape of Water.
I just have to say, somehow you put an R in his last name, and I'm really impressed by it.
Stolbart.
Sorry. Just a whole ass new letter.
Wait, there is an R in his name.
You put an R in the first half of his last name.
Stolberg.
Thank you.
Sorry. We suck.
We really do, and we freely admit it.
I'm so nervous because this is so good.
The tea?
Everything about all of this.
No, that's not true, because we fuck up people's names in films that are not so good also.
That's for different reasons.
That's not true. A couple of actors' notes. Amy Adams was Denis Villeneuve's first choice for Louise. She agreed to the role within 24 hours of receiving the script. That's according to IMDb. The actors' notes taken from IMDb and Wiki. Principal photography began immediately following Jeremy Renner's completion of his role in Captain America: Civil War. And Adams was the one who suggested Renner for her astrophysicist sidekick. In an article written by Ann Thompson for IndieWire, it was stated that Renner was comfortable in the knowledge that it was, quote, her movie.
And boy, is it her movie.
Indeed. The budget for Arrival was $47 million. It earned $203.4 million back, so huzzah for that. The reception was overall very positive. Rotten Tomatoes critic aggregate of 94%, Metacritic an 81%. Audience reception was also pretty high. Rotten Tomatoes 82% audience score, and on IMDb a 7.9 out of 10.
Some of our specs for tonight. The runtime is 1 hour 56 for a total of 116 minutes. Sound mix is Dolby Digital. The aspect ratio is that 2.39 to 1, that anamorphic aspect ratio. The cameras used were an Arri Alexa XTM and an Arri Alexa XT Plus. Both cameras use the Camtek Vintage Ultra Prime, Kawasone Promoner, and Zeiss Super Speed lenses. And one day I will not be a lazy asshole and I will look in and give you guys a little more detail about these. I'm not a gear person. I am really bad about when it comes to gear. I just know lenses help you see things and cameras record things. So
what?
The negative format is Kodak. The cinematographic process.
Process
is Arri Raw 3.4K. That's basically what they shot it at. And then what they exported it at is 2K. The printed format was that 35 millimeter digital. The D Cinema is your digital projector.
Mm-hmm. Back to the digital.
I feel like a lot of things that we're going to review are going to be digital.
Digital. Back to Wiki and IMDb for some of the interesting factoids about this film. Not a ton, because there were a ton, and it's just overwhelming. I mean, this was a very detail-oriented movie with a lot of creative behind-the-scenes aspects to it, so I tried to keep it a little bit brief so we could talk about the movie itself. Principal photography on the film began on June 7th, 2015 in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. At the 89th Academy Awards, it would go on to win the Academy Award for Best Sound Editing and receive nominations for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Cinematography, Best Film Editing, Best Production Design, and Best Sound Mixing. Additionally, at the 74th Golden Globes, Amy Adams received a nomination for Best Actress in a Motion Picture Drama, and composer Johan Johansson received a nomination for Best Original Score. Both the book and the screenwriting require the invention of a form of alien linguistics, which recurs in the plot. The film uses a script designed by the artist Martine Bertrand, who is the wife of the production designer Patrice Vermette. Based on transcript Hissier's original concept. Computer scientists Stephen and Christopher Wolfram analyzed it to provide the basis for Banks' work in the film. Three linguists from McGill University were consulted. So all very detail-oriented and, frankly, quite impressive.
Kind of like Avatar. They had a linguist come in and do the Na'vi language. And there's something else. Oh, like Tolkien was an English major and he like legit did all of his own languages and stuff. It's always interesting when you get that detailed into a world. And this is actually technically our world too. So.
Yeah, that's true. Heiserer said at the Alamo Drafthouse Fantastic Fest premiere at the end of September 2016 that Shang's wife's last words, when translated into English, were, quote, "In war, there are no winners, only widows," end quote. I just got chills when I said that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't reveal that in the movie at any point in time, and you don't see subtitles, no translation, mm-hmm. anything like that. So you're just kind of left to wonder unless you look it up yourself. So
I wonder why.
I don't know. Adds to the mystery of it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, non-exposition.
Meh.
So I don't know. I kind of like knowing after the fact. It just makes it more impactful.
Mm.
Of course, you know, now next time you watch and you know that,
yeah,
it'll be even more full body chills because that's what you need is more full body chills while watching this movie.
Did we see this movie after the award ceremony or before? We had to have seen it before.
We saw it before.
I just don't remember it.
This was the year where we saw every single Best Picture nominee before.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't recall it hitting all of, being nominated for all of those things, and mm-hmm. I was surprised that it was.
I do
nominated for Best Picture.
I remember.
Mm.
Yep.
It almost feels like it was kind of like no one gave it a lot of hype,
mm-hmm.
and it just slid in there.
Absolutely.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. It just kind of snuck into a bunch of categories. And
it was that one movie that you knew deserved to be nominated for everything. And even though you felt it might have deserved some of the wins, you knew that it wasn't going to.
Yeah.
Because all of the hype, if you recall that season, was, is it going to be Moonlight or is it going to be La La Land?
That's true. Yeah. Because La La Land got a lot of hype.
Mm-hmm. La La Land. La 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 La. Yeah. Fuck that movie. Continuing on. Let's talk about this movie. She's making a face. You can't see it, but it's something.
I'm so excited. Oh, my God. Anyway. It has my favorite actress, and it's my second favorite movie of all time. Mm-hmm.
It's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
I just realized that your favorite movie of all time doesn't have your favorite actor.
James?
Yeah.
Choms?
Yeah. I mean, my favorite movie doesn't have any of my favorite people.
Yes, that's a weird thing for you to be.
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry, continue. Let's fucking refocus.
Singular note about direction, because I really just, I don't know what to say about this film. All of his films are just really good films. He knows what he's doing. I'd like to see maybe some of his, if he's ever done like short films, kind of what the difference is, or earlier films, because a lot of his movies that I'm aware of have huge names in them, and he seems to take command of them quite well. So I don't know. My note is the non-linear storytelling is such a hard thing to achieve and to just do it well. And this is a movie that you can't tell in any other way. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, what a task to pull off.
Yeah.
I
mean, and that's true. And the reason why he's able to pull it off, honestly, is because Villeneuve relies on his audience being smart, which is a breath of fresh air compared to the shit show we watched last week. There are going to be some digs. I'm sorry. I'm still real salty. We know he depends on us being smart because he banks on us falling into the standard storytelling composition, which is linear storytelling. The conceptualization of flashbacks, the trust that we place in the narration by the main character to be reliable as far as chronology. Like, he banks on the audience being a, he trusts us to be a movie going audience, knowledgeable about film, how it's supposed to go.
Mm-hmm.
He uses us and our tendencies as movie watchers and the consumers of stories in order to fuck with us without the use of exposition or pulling the rug from under our feet just to pull the rug from under our feet. We can very well figure it out as we go. And if we can't, there are visuals and dialogue to help us out without bashing us over the head.
Mm-hmm.
We have a director who trusts us. He banks on us. And just, I fucking love him for that.
I was just thinking it's kind of like a teacher holding your hand, but not quite. It's more of like a mentor kind of guiding you through in a balanced, appropriate way.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is hand holding, but not quite. Like, he just gives you nudges as to what's happening.
Yeah, like, yeah, I think you just used the word, and if you didn't, you used the definition of the word guiding. You know, he guides you, which is appropriate. He doesn't give you the answers on the test like he's, you know, and I love that. And I also just, I have to give him so much credit for how he trusts his cast as well. Like, he's just a director who places his trust in the right hands when it comes to his audience, his writers, his cast. It's obvious when watching his films, particularly coming to mind, this Enemy and Prisoners. He recognizes the power of his cast, the tight shots, the character-driven scenes, the necessity of the characters to drive the story. It's risky to place so much of your work's success on another one person or few people. And Villeneuve is ballsy enough to do so. And it just always seems to pay off for him in major ways, resulting in incredible movies. He's definitely becoming one of my favorite directors in recent years. Mm-hmm. And I just, anything that he touches, like, I'm so stoked for Dune.
Oh, yeah. And I tried reading the books. They're too dry for me. I wonder if I could do it, if I could do the audiobooks. But, like, I've seen parts of the very original. I've seen Syfy's remakes of Dune and the Children of Dune. And I fucking love it. I can't wait. Because it's going to be more of this. It's going to be more of good sci-fi.
It's gonna be beautiful.
Even though it's not going to be, like, the straight up, like, hard sci-fi. It's going to be, you know, a little farther towards the, this isn't real shit. But still, it's going to be good sci-fi.
And I just, it's going to be Oscar Isaac looking fine. It's going to be good. It's going to be good shit.
Plus Jason Momoa, Josh
Timothy.
Brolin.
Yeah. God damn, that cast of this All director. Right. Sorry. Yep, different movie. Anyways, but yeah, but this is what I'm talking about. Like, this is a director that gets you excited about his work. And that's just incredible, especially in this genre.
Yeah.
sci-fi isn't his only genre, but he's made such a spectacular sci-fi movie that you're like, oh, this motherfucker, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Characters.
Mm, I have a couple general writing notes.
I have 1,000.
I mentioned this to you when I was writing these notes, and it was so bizarre to me. And it's just, there's something so incredibly, just incredibly singular about the writing of this film that does what no other film I've seen has managed to do. And it's that it makes me genuinely angry about how stellar the writing is. Like, I was writing these notes and I was mad about it. The use of nonlinear storytelling is the entire point of the film, not only in order to tell the story most effectively, but also the point of the narrative itself. And it's done so effectively that we get to live Louise's experience firsthand with her.
Mm-hmm.
We're watching her life unfold at the same time she is, and we don't know it upon first watch, just like she doesn't know it. And we get to experience the feelings, the realizations, the loss, the difficult decisions at the same time as her. And I hate it so much because I didn't sign up to have my heart wrenched out of my body when I sat down in a movie theater to watch a sci-fi movie. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I don't really know if anybody really knew what this was going to be about, because I don't remember really knowing what we were getting into.
Mm-mm. Do you remember the guy? Do you remember the guy at the movie theater?
No.
You don't remember the guy? He was sitting. No, dude. He was sitting like, we were here, and he was sitting up and to the left. And he was like pissed that it like wasn't Independence Day.
I think a lot of people were mad it wasn't. I can't believe
you don't remember, because thought this dude was like hilarious. It's like the end of the movie, and he was just like mad that there weren't any explosions.
Well, there was an explosion.
Shut up, you know what I mean? He was mad that there was no, like, alien attack. That, like, where's the, like,
no,
like
I don't.
Where's Will Smith? Like, kind of, it was like that kind of guy, and that's what I'm thinking
Did
of.
Did Independence so Day come out?
Sad that you don't remember the guy.
You know my memory is just god-awful.
Anyways.
Sorry.
Continue.
Once again, mine are kind of like the observational notes in the beginning. That's, you know, she keeps saying, come back to me. I think it's more recent viewings that have been like, oh no, that's what she's saying. She wants to go back to her daughter. Which is sad. This is such an unsuspecting, sad movie. And aliens.
Wah, 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 wah.
It's almost like she's trying to get back into that headspace that are those moments with her daughter,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know. I'm slow on the uptake, apparently, with your response to me.
I mean, of course she is.
Well,
that's the whole point.
You know, you mentioned in your points, it's the nonlinear storytelling is so well done that we obviously think that these flash forwards are actually flashbacks.
Yeah.
And that's just, what other movies really do that?
It's one of those things where you ask that question and my brain starts to scramble, because you know there are some.
Yeah.
But you can't pull it to the forefront because nothing has done it as well as this. Yeah,
exactly.
And you mentioned it when I was talking about Villanueva. Like, the film, it comes with some exposition regardless of what I said.
Yeah.
But it doesn't in such a way that doesn't ruin any of the storytelling. And the one instance that really pops into my head is when Ian is giving the briefing.
Yeah.
As though we are students or scientists. Like, he's bringing them up to speed. Like, his group, his people. It's needed for the purpose of getting us where we need to be in a way that doesn't over-explain, under-explain, over-expose. It's necessary, and it simply just explains. And it explains in a way that makes sense. God damn it. Fuck off. Fucking just Pandorum.
Well, it's back to that guiding, and it's back to what you just said. It's like he's talking to his fellow scientists.
Yeah.
It's another, you know, we're not being treated as idiots.
Mm-mm.
We're being treated as equals, almost.
Yeah, but not in such a way where it's even, it's not that over exposition either, where it gets too technical.
Right.
It's like, no, I'm talking to you in a natural way. Like I would talk to you in a room and just be like, this is what you need to know.
Yep.
And this brings us to where we are and let's continue the story.
And Louise does that too. When so my, you know, to tangent slightly, the Colonel, someone you don't fuck with, he's the sort of positive antagonist that we need to ground us.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of plays the part of us to a degree.
Sure.
Because you've got Louise and you've got Ian trying to explain. Their job is literally to make contact and then explain it to the military guys to make it work for them. So, you know, we've got Louise. The military wants them to ask, you know, what is your purpose? And then she breaks that sentence down.
Right. Oh, God, that's such a good part.
It is. So she breaks that sentence down. Each individual, it's almost like you're in an English lesson.
Yeah.
So it's just.
God, yeah.
I love that part.
Yep. Fuck. Well, kind of, okay, I'm going to springboard because, you know, the Colonel, I really love him as a character. He's smart.
Mm-hmm.
He's both smart enough to be able to not just let anyone cajole themselves. Juliet taught me how to say that word yesterday.
Cajole.
I didn't say cajole. Fuck off. I said cajole. Let's be real. It's one of those words that I've read and have never fucking heard out loud somehow. We all have those. My very first one was melancholy. Never heard it said out loud. Always read it. Thought it was pronounced melancholy. Everyone have a cute giggle. But anyways, he's smart enough to be able to not just let anyone, I still, it's so weird, cajole, is that how you say it? Cajole himself into the middle of, you know, what's the most major event to ever occur in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I also appreciated that he was man enough to recognize when he was wrong. So yeah. I'm thinking about the beginning. You know, he goes to Luis. He's like, okay, can you do this? And she's like, well, yeah, but you got to take me there.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not dumb enough to just bring anyone.
Yep.
But he also, once he figures out that she's the right person for the job, he's like, okay, I'm going to fix this right now. Let's go get her.
Yeah, and it's in her, so her little thing to challenge his decision, that whole Sanskrit translation mm-hmm. in war is super interesting. I kept meaning to look that up and I didn't. So yeah. I'm curious as to, you know, why is this well-known, this other well-known individual for linguistics.
Linguistics.
You know, why do they do it incorrectly?
Right.
And why that specific word, which basically comes back and you know, plays a part in the absolutely. Movie. Like, I mean, it was obviously purposeful that they chose war.
Yeah.
That the writers
everything
chose
in this
war.
Movie is purposeful. I mean, what? Which is so great. Shut up.
What?
Yes. I know. Don't tease me. But I just, you know, that's a really good, it's really smart writing because it lets us know right away we can trust him. We can trust him to make the right call. He just needs the information. So he's not going based off of emotion. He's going based off of, okay, explain it to me. Explain to me why. And then I will make a call based on the information that you give me. And he does that through the whole movie.
Yeah, he's very, he is an antagonistic force, mm-hmm. but he's a good one.
Yes.
And I wonder if there's a different name for it. Because then you have the CIA person who's a legit antagonist and doesn't do anything to help her.
Right.
So, I mean, like, so Colonel Weber's is more of a neutral party, I don't remember the character's name. The CIA agent, whatever his name is. Halpern?
Oh, Stahlberg?
Yeah.
Yes.
He legit is like constantly getting in the way and is constantly putting up barriers for them.
He's so
such
fucking
a
funny.
Dick. He is funny. There's the low-key humor in this is great.
Oh
the
my
sarcasm,
God.
It's just right up our alley.
He's so funny.
Because the CIA dudes, you know, he makes really weak points and he's literally just an obstacle.
Yeah.
But you can't do without him.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, you need him there. He's necessary. You know, before we really get into Louise and Ian, just as far as like the side characters.
Yeah, I have other.
Just like, you know, what? I know you have a little note about this. I just need to get this off of my chest because I like your note about it. Okay. I know aliens coming to Earth especially aliens who are as massive, can't speak your language, mention the word weapon or what you think is weapon, must be scary, right? But fuck the assholes with the bomb.
Yeah.
And seriously, I just have to throw it out there. I feel like that can speak so directly to a portion of this country politically.
Mm-hmm.
And while I don't want to really get into it, all I can say is that I appreciate the balls that it took to acknowledge somewhat blatantly that the fear of others leads to making stupid fucking decisions. And I'll just kind of step away from that neatly and completely right now.
Well, I'm gonna jump onto that just real quick.
Please do.
In the very beginning, when Louise is talking to her mom's super worried, and Louise basically chastises her mom, like, you know, I told you not to listen to those people. They're idiots.
Mm.
So who do you think? What kind of, you know, group do this? Do you think she's, you know,
right,
talking about? Back to that whole weapon thing. And back to what I was saying about Louise kind of giving us an English lesson, that comes back. They talk about how, you know, we have to make sure that they understand what we're saying and that their vocabulary is large enough to understand the words that they are using. And we come to find out they say offer weapon, and what they mean is gift.
Gift, yeah.
And tool.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's just... That, I think, comes back a couple times, and it's super interesting. And it's like, no, we tried to tell you, and yet this issue still happened.
Right.
It's, you know, miscommunication on a bunch of fronts.
Just the concept, of course, in talking about writing and characters and people not understanding is just the main theme of work together.
Yeah, my kind of, in all caps, is... Yes, world, fucking come together for once. Jesus Christ.
And I wonder if there was kind of, because this was a really, I feel like rewatching this twice this time around. And later when we kind of get into the et ceteras and the discussion that we're going to have, I'll get to like the underlying emotional reason about like parenting and things like that. I honestly wonder if these two rewatches for us was so emotional because of the current situation with COVID and people dying in the state of the world and
politics, right?
In politics and everything, because it's just like, this is a time, just like in this movie, obviously very different, but that theme of like, this is when people need to band together.
Yeah.
And people aren't doing it. And then you watch a movie where, okay, eventually they do. And it'd just be really nice to see.
Yeah. You know, it's like any other fiction. It gives you hope.
Yeah. Or it should.
It should.
Even though, I mean, yes, it can. But when the situation we're in right now, it's that feeling of this is, you know, false hope. Like, this would be nice kind of idea.
I guess it would be nice.
No. Okay. Anyways, talk to me about Louise.
No, I got... No, wait. Mm. What do I have? Oh, it just... It's really fascinating how you, along with Louise and Ian, grow to enjoy the company of the aliens.
Oh my god, yes.
Because they're legit characters. Yes. And you don't even hear them speak, and you are told what they're saying through other characters. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting. Just a comment. Fuck you, bomb bitches.
That's what I wanted. That's what I wanted you to say.
Fuck you know guys. What?
No, I'm going to play off of you because this is, I love the fact that you just brought up Abbott and Costello in characters in writing because I had them under production design.
Well, I mean, just like any other characters, mm-hmm. they fall under multiple categories.
But I feel like what you're saying is more appropriate, actually, under characters because I'm just like, you know, I mentioned creature design, but talk about them as characters. Like, my God, creature design, how the fuck this film managed to make me mourn the loss of an alien being with no real humanoid characteristics, aside from when you actually see Costello and you look up and sure, there's like maybe an anamorphous head shape up there. No form of language resembling human beings, no features resembling any living thing I've ever cared about, except, like, sure, they're heptapods, they have their pods, they, like, octopi are cool.
They kind of look like a weird, you know, octopus hand.
sure.
thing.
Yeah, but I'm like, octopuses aren't like neat, but I don't give a fuck emotionally about a specific octopus. You know what I mean? And I'm sure it can come down to writing. Oh, look, I did tie them together. I forgot myself. But also about like how the creature moves, engages, interacts, and just like the design and the writing of the creature.
The proper introduction with the hands on the divider. Yeah.
And it's just like, fuck. Like what you just said, like they're characters somehow that you grow to care about and enjoy.
And mourn.
And you see Ian when they're walking, that Ian walks part. That's
under my et cetera, where one of them is mimicking Ian. Yes. It's hilarious.
Ian walks and he's walking and they're walking with him and he's smiling. And it's just like, oh, shit. Yes, it's so good. So good. God, so good. Okay.
You want to do Ian or you want Louise first?
Take it.
Just Ian. He is a really fun, witty comic relief, I think. I think he helps balance out the weight on your face.
God damn, our notes are real different.
Yeah, to me, he's kind of I think delivers a lot of more witty one-liners. Not necessarily one-liner. To me, I always found him funny, and he kind of balanced out like the weight that we got from Louise and like her responsibilities. It's refreshing, I think, that we have this equally smart and powerful male character step to the side to let a more qualified person, take the light that's so deserved, who happens to be a woman. And, right. You know, we've got the original Alien movie who has, you know, Ripley, but what other movies do we really have, especially in this genre, mm-hmm. that are anything but a white dude?
I don't recall the film enough, but now that you bring that up and it's completely unrelated, I only watched it once because I didn't love it, but Prometheus comes to mind.
Yeah, I mean, which wasn't is that Rooney? Same no or yeah is
Rooney Mara?
No, it's not Rooney Mara. No, it's Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh, it's the other one. Yeah. Rooney plays the
American one. Which is stupid because I really like this actress.
Yeah, you do. Fuck.
Shit.
Shit balls.
My last note on Ian. It's nice that he also has his own moments as well. He has his own eurekas and contributes in an appropriate way. This is very, I feel, real life and realistic.
New me. It's new me Rupas. Sorry.
Yes. Yeah, new me. That's it.
Yeah, we have really different views on Ian.
Well, I think someone might be biased about Ian. Just kidding.
Okay, we'll get there. So Ian, to me, was super relatable because of how he responded to everything in the film. And I feel like it was much like how I imagined I would respond. A little bit of terror. A lot of excitement. More hesitancy than Louise, but still willing to engage in this unknown territory because, like, this is pretty damn cool, is it not? I like his appreciation for Louise's work, his willingness to trust her and her expertise, kind of mm-hmm. like how you were mentioning. And his willingness to engage with the aliens as living, intelligent beings. Like I said, I liked his respect for Louise and for Abbott and Costello. God, his willingness to stand between an actual fucking gun and Louise there at the end. Whew. He has that much faith in what she's doing for the world and just, like, sweep me off my goddamn feet. You want a romantic gesture? The romance in this movie is very understated. And it's not overdone. It's not ridiculous. It's not, you know how we always talk about it's not necessary. Mm-hmm. It's very much necessary in this, but it's not blatant. It's
natural.
A focus. It's exactly. And just that act alone, mm-hmm. like by the end of this, he's willing to be like, I'm just gonna stand here in front of a loaded weapon so that she can do this necessary thing. I don't even know what the hell she's doing, but I know it must be important. Just that level of trust. And
you can also tell, just kind of a quick performance thing, they are buddies.
Yeah.
They have great chemistry together.
God, such natural chemistry, mm-hmm. and I love that. Something about, you know, and I'll talk a little bit about this later, I am so enamored with Jeremy Renner, and I love him for so many reasons.
Hawkeye is her favorite character.
No, he's my second favorite fictional character of all time.
Or just, I meant in the MCU.
Well, yes, of course.
Anyway, sorry, I didn't specify.
Do you know me? Anyways, no. I feel I'm never one to assume that a celebrity is just like a great person because of how they're represented. But somehow, knowing that Jeremy Renner's buddies with Amy Adams makes me like trust that he's good people. But that's besides the point. I relate to him so much more following the first watch, once we realize how much of an impact he has on Louisa's story, and therefore the entire narrative as the father in the story as well. And it becomes harder for me to watch Ian because he's likable, lovable, easy to care about and root for. And after the first go around, we know that he's going to go through the most excruciating pain a human being can experience. And unlike Louise, he didn't have the power or knowledge like she did. Mm-hmm. So you're over here saying he's the comedic relief. Ian is where the heartbreak in this movie stems for me.
And I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
They don't have to be. But for me, every time I watch this movie and he comes on screen, all I feel is sadness. Which sucks. I
laugh at him.
Which is fine, and it's great. And there's, I think
he has great lines.
He does, and he does bring, I'm not going to say he doesn't bring any levity to it. Upon the first watch, I probably would have agreed with you. Mm-hmm. But then just not being able to stay in the moment with the film moving forward after the first watch, Ian, just the film, its story is tragic and hopeful. He is the point of heartbreak for me in this movie.
And just, I mean, that's, you know, this is definitely a movie, just a slight tangent, that you need to watch more than once.
Oh, absolutely. There's something every time that you catch, that you don't catch. I've watched this movie, I'd say by this point, at least 8 or 9 times.
Yeah, you've actually watched it more than I have.
Yeah. Over the last couple of years, at least 8 or 9, edging on a dozen max. And there's something whether it's a line, a visual, something that adds to it.
Oh, before we move on to Louise, are you finished with the end? Do you remember being in the movie theater? I think we were about a third of the way through, and I like leaned over and was like, this is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I don't think I've ever done that in a movie.
Yeah, I mean, it was something else. It was an experience. It was something else entirely.
Mm-hmm. It was great. And we were in like a little, tiny theater? Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We absolutely were.
So good.
It was.
Louise. She makes me want to know more about languages.
Yes.
I want to go be a linguist.
I keep thinking you're talking about pasta. No. Like, linguistic.
I want to learn more about languages.
Do you want to learn more about languages, or do you want to learn more about Louise?
I want Louise to teach me about languages.
Hard same.
It's almost so. When she's kind of in her office at the school, kind of listening to the news, watching the news, and the colonel steps in, she is almost, it feels to me, especially on the very last watch that we did, that she's just waiting for something to do with her life. She's waiting for this challenge to come along. And I don't think that she's a chosen one. I think she just has like the necessary skills. Does that make sense? You're just kind of like, I'm sorry. I was thinking of throughout the whole movie, this very last time that it was like, because you always have like that chosen one, you know, the hero's journey and blah, blah, blah. It was like, I don't think that she is a chosen one. And I think, I don't know. It's just, it's a weird jumble of thoughts. Sorry, guys. I lost track of what I was saying. And that's not actually in my notes. Basically, she's just waiting for this opportunity. And it's super interesting. And how, like, on the colonel she is about, no, let me, you know, I'm your best choice.
Right, I'm ready for this.
I did forget a note, and I'm going to jump back really, really quick. I love how this movie is, how, like, the countries, at the beginning at least, are communicating with each other. I just really enjoyed that, and how it's not all the U.S., that comes up with all of the answers, and that other countries were able to decipher things. Like, they only got one of their breakthroughs because of Pakistan.
Right.
Which is an interesting country to pick due to, like, you know, histories
foreign
between
relations.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. Back to Louise.
Well, no, you're right, because that's how that shit would work. There's no way we would figure everything out. And as much as some people would like to think so.
Yeah,
there's no way.
It's like just reinforcing the idea that everyone has to work together right. in this. This is, you know, this planet has to come together to make this work. Because apparently in 3,000 years, we got to go help these bitches do something.
Right. Yeah.
Which we never know what it's going to be. As in, much as I want to know, I hope we never find out.
I know. Yeah. This is a movie that doesn't need a sequel or a prequel or a sidequel or like they just
it's kind of like District 9.
District 9 is so good.
Anyway.
Yes.
Sorry.
God, Louise. She is just like in no particular order. She's competent, intelligent, she's witty, brave, strong, confident, she's sure of herself. And then she's also emotionally driven, she's selfish, she's flawed, she has a habit of going against authority. She's perfectly written and it drives me mad.
She's definitely one of those strong female characters that isn't like this big buff warrior
yes.
or is violent. I was just watching an interview about the actresses who play Ciri and Yennefer, and they were asking Freya, who plays Ciri, I think what she likes about her character, and it was basically along those lines.
Right.
Ciri, you know, has her powers and she uses her voice not only like in a like magical way.
It's probably just got real confusing for people who might not have seen Arrival. There are no characters named Ciri.
No, sorry, in The Witcher. I apologize. I got really excited. Continue.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, no. But you like went real deep
I
into these other characters.
I got really excited. Because we don't get female characters
yes,
like this.
Exactly.
That's the point. If you took anything away from what I just said, we don't get female characters that are just strong in any other way than being like physically strong
yeah.
or violent.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Ta-da.
Yeah. Or traumatized.
Yeah.
Which what's nice about this movie is you're led to believe that she is.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not.
Not yet.
Like you're led to believe that she is like, no, fuck it. I'm going to go do this and I'm going to be brave and I'm going to throw caution to the wind because I've lost everything.
Mm-hmm.
But she hasn't.
Yeah, not
she
yet.
She hasn't lost shit. She does this because she knows she can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's brave in the face of terror because she's just brave, not because she doesn't have anything to live for.
Yeah.
And I once again love how the writer and director flips that on its head.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no. She has everything. You know, she's in the prime of her life.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God damn it. I have chills. I was just saying, you know, it drives me. I was in the middle of a sentence, by the way. Don't puppy dog me. I interrupt you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just giving you shit. It drives me crazy, her character, because I know that I'll never be able to come even close to creating such a whole character, including such a whole female character, because women are hard to write because of the way society writes women.
Mm-hmm.
As a mother, I watch this movie over and over and over again, and I wonder how she comes to the conclusions that she does. And I come to a different conclusion every single time. And I mourn with her. I mourn through her. I'm angry at her and for her. And as someone fascinated by also the science of what's happening and a spectator to the aliens, she's the perfect vehicle for the audience. She's competent but not overly cocky, giving us everything we need to connect to them and to empathize with them. Somehow she's written in such a way that she's entirely whole, both before and after we see her go through a lifetime of changes. And I'd really like to know how the fuck the story writer and screenplay writer managed to do that shit.
You a lot of index cards on whew. A wall with some string.
You have a whole character before she goes through a character arc and a whole character after. And
I mean,
just
that's the whole thing because she, with how the gift works,
yeah, I know.
she's all of these moments in time at once. So she's this person
always.
And then, you know, I mean, back to the beginning, she doesn't yet know
I know
about her what about, the, Hannah. About the gift or the Hannah, but like you feel the melancholy. Her mom even asks her if she's okay, and she's like, "Yeah, I'm fine. I'm, you know, the same." Which I mean, it's just another layer. I thought it was really interesting, and I don't know if this should be under performances, but it's just when she sees the shell when they're approaching it in the truck for the first, she has a physical reaction to it, and I don't know if it's you know, saying of things to come and how she eventually connects with them, or if it's just fear, excitement, yeah. and nervousness. It's super interesting. I'm pretty sure she's like the only woman in this movie. There are like minor side people in the background that are female, but I feel like she's the only woman. And we literally only have like one person of color. So those are downsides to this movie. Huge.
I mean, yeah, you have, I mean, in major roles, you do have the,
you have Forest Whitaker.
Well, yeah, I'm just thinking you have the other countries, like you have the general and his wife, you know, but it's also a small cast.
Yeah, but I mean.
I know. I mean, it's a sci-fi movie made in America. That's not an excuse, but more of a comment of what do you expect.
No, no, it's just an interesting, we are praising it because it has a female lead, but it, I mean, it fails in other aspects, I don't know. I love the story about kangaroos.
Oh, that's excellent. Wasn't I? It's not true, but it proves my point.
Exactly.
Yep.
So the last note that I have on here is for our argument later on.
Okay, we'll get to that. Yeah, so like moving out of characters and more into like the physical manifestations within the film, just the set and design. Oh god,
the alien design feels so unique, and I know you kind of went into the description of them earlier, and it's just, I don't think we've seen anything like that. And just, I mean, I could see so many more sci-fi things and, you know, put them on my list of things that I've watched, basically. But I feel like I've seen more sci-fi than you. But we still, like, it's just, it's so unique. And we've watched things like Face Off, which comes up with pretty unique and interesting styles that you were haven't necessarily seen before, but this just like takes the cake on design.
And I know, you know, they're heptapods, and a lot of the time they're compared to you know, to, like octopus, like octopi. I just keep thinking when I watch about tree roots as well, like trees and the way that they root, and like they're walking tree roots,
which is interesting because you can tell the age of a tree by the ring inside of it.
Yeah, I mean, just, I don't know, something about the cross between, you know, heptapods, trees, like elemental, elemental and just biological creatures. So they're not, it's not like we've not seen things that make up the creature design.
You
can,
yeah, you see the inspiration.
It's an it's an amalgamation that I don't think we've ever really seen before, which is really cool.
And I thoroughly enjoy, you know, the shell, which is the ship. And its design and how they've shown and explained to us how it works, or as much as they can, you know, how it evaporates away. Like, I don't think any sci-fi thing, at least visual media, I don't know about novels or anything like that, has told a story in which space travel has functioned that way, which is fascinating. Who would think of that?
God, the size. Every shot that shows the massive size of the shell.
Oh, there's a very specific one.
Are you thinking of the one kind of from the top that shows down to the ground?
No, opposite viewpoint. You're on the ground and it just takes up like the whole frame, and you've got just a wee bit of sky on each side of it.
I am thinking of the opposite. There is a shot that is, it's not even from the very tip top. I almost think it's from the midline of the shell, and it's shooting looking down, and the bottom of the frame is just texture. You see the very detailed kind of like rough texture of the shell in the massive just size, the sheer size of it. it's vertigo inducing mm-hmm. and breathtaking, and the production design and cinematography of that shot just like it fucking blows my mind every time. It just, I can't conceptualize what it must be like. You see them driving up to it, you see them standing and underneath it and looking up inside from that little rectangle that they go up, and it makes me, it just, it feels suffocating, and I'm not even claustrophobic, but just to be inside of something so huge mm-hmm. in such a small space, and to know how huge the creatures are, and to know that it's taking place mm-hmm. inside the shell, like, whew, it gives me this reaction, like, I'm uncomfortable.
You also have that very first establishing shot, just to kind of go back into cinematography, where you've got the clouds coming over the nearby mountains, and, like, you've got the entire camp laid out before it, and they look like ants.
Oh, yeah.
By comparison, and it's just, it's a very crisp, yes. lovely shot.
Yes, it is.
You're covering my notes.
No, I'm sorry.
We need a bigger desk.
We do.
It's interesting to see the progression of technology that's brought into the shell for them to communicate with them. Like, you have them in these big, you know, hazmat suits. You've got your little canary, too. They're wearing casual clothes and using a bunch of digital, you know, like, tablets and screens. My one critique is when Louise ends up on the ship inside with Costello, mm-hmm. her hair.
It's so funky.
It is, and it's so odd that this particular effect doesn't quite match up with the level of the other effects. And, you know, I think it's something that movies have always struggled with, is getting realistic looking hair in an underwater environment. Short of actually shooting someone in the water. So it's, I don't know. I'd be interested to see how they approached
it's
doing that.
Fascinating to me that you just said underwater environment.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say the space in which they occupy is, in fact, water.
Yeah, I just never in a million years would have used the comparison to an underwater environment.
Well, that's, to me, that's what it looks.
Oh, you edit this out, I'm gonna be mad.
That looks like the effect that they were going for, to me.
Yeah. Huh.
Because it's not like the heptapods have hair. So, I mean, they don't have clothing, they don't have mm-hmm. hair. And I can't remember what she's wearing. It's probably heavier and stiffer material. But, I mean, I feel like if you had, like, a loose t-shirt on in that environment, it would kind of float a bit. Not necessarily, like, her hair.
But yeah,
it would
kind of lift off of... Yeah, I was thinking, like, zero gravity. But, like, I never would have thought underwater. I don't know.
If hair does that necessarily, if it would be more static. Because she's moving and it looked... To me, it looks like...
Yeah, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just like, you said underwater. I'm like, what the fuck? Where did that come from? But you're right. The hair throws me. It looks... I wouldn't go so far as to say, like, it looks badly animated. It just looks off.
Pulls you out a bit.
Yeah, it's distracting.
And I think underwater because of how... Costello swims away.
Sure. I mean, okay. I think that's maybe why I think, like, in my mind, I'm always just like, oh, yeah, gravity's fucked in there. That's where it's just, like, the concept of gravity.
And Ian makes a comment. It's like their atmosphere is completely different than ours.
Exactly.
So, it's, you know.
So I'm just thinking, like, yeah, this is, like, spacey shit. Their gravity is different. Their atmosphere is different. So, like, you're stepping into, like, what the atmosphere on their home planet
must
be like.
Of course, yes.
So
you're just effect-wise.
Like, water? they're in water? Yeah, no, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cinematography is great. There are too many examples, so I'll sum it up with just, you know, three words, which is holy framing, Batman. The framing is just phenomenal to show size discrepancies, to keep it character focused, to keep the relationships in focus, like just the framing in this film. And also, I don't even know if this is accurate, and I don't know how to explain it, so hopefully you'll know what I'm talking about, because I don't know the lingo. So there's this crisp, bright, sharply lit feel to the images that we see whenever Louise is remembering, well, quote, remembering, whenever we see the flash forwards with Hannah. And it kind of juxtaposes against the darker, kind of dim shots that we see when Louise is in the base or with Abbott and Costello. And the symbolism might be a little bit lost to me, and that's whatever. But I know that it slices me, like, every single time. And I don't know if it's, you know, does the time with Hannah feel more real or brighter? Is it more meaningful? Probably. I just know that the way her time with Hannah is filmed versus her time, like, in real time as we're seeing her, there's something different. Whether it's lighting, film, it feels more crisp. It feels more real.
It's lighter. It's definitely, I think, a brighter palette, even in, like, the darker shots. Mm-hmm. I think you hit it. It's a happier time for her. Yeah. It's where she wants to be.
It just, yeah, something, which obviously the emotions there, the acting, like, all of it. But just there's something too about the...
Or just to, I mean, and oftentimes when you do a quote-unquote flashback,
yeah,
you oftentimes make it a little fuzzy and make it feel a little more dreamlike.
Feels
but
the
that's
opposite.
Not quite... So, I mean, that's probably why, because it's not a flashback. It's not a flashback. It's...
These assholes.
Yeah, so I don't know.
It makes me want to, like, curl. It's so in focus. Is what it feels like comparatively. It almost feels
and
like.
And that probably is how it feels for her.
God, I hate it so much. It's so good.
Yeah, it's so good.
Anything else for cinematography?
I have a couple notes, yeah. In the classroom where they start off to the side, she starts off to the side, excuse me, she's already like removed the TV, everybody's watching the newscast. She, like, literally steps to center frame and it very slowly zooms on her as you're listening to the audio of, you know, the breaking news and just kind of her face very slowly gets, you know, more concerned. And then they kind of cut to the students' reactions. And after they cut from the students' reactions, you get a tiny, tiny glimpse of what you're about to see because they show a very, very dark nighttime image of a shell. And I noticed it on our first rewatch and I was just like, oh, whoa. That was great. Louise seems to be kind of either completely or partially in shadow a lot and then will move to reveal herself. And it's so interesting because oftentimes, excuse me, you know, something else is being revealed or she's discovering something or, you know, figuring something out as she's being revealed. And it's, you know, or something's being revealed verbally or just kind of metaphorically. It's super interesting to have that. There are a handful of shots that have both Louise and the shell or the aliens in view behind her. The specific example that I always think of is when Louise and Ian are sitting on the truck talking, mm-hmm. they have her on the right third and they have the shell in the background on the left third. And it's a little blurry, but it's there. And they're constantly connecting the two.
Right.
It's the same thing. It's not the same thing, but it's kind of, she's constantly thinking about it, and I don't know, my words are failing me right now.
No,
that happens a lot.
Yeah, visually, but the dialogue, everything about it ties them together, mm-hmm. though. I just keep thinking.
Yeah, tied together. They're constantly tied together.
You said that, and I got full body chills because I keep thinking of Costello telling her, you know, Louise has the gift.
Yeah.
And how it sends down the pot for her, and how, you know, Ian, are you dreaming in their language? And she looks over and I'm pretty sure it's Abbott in the corner. And just like, you know, it's that you said you don't think she's a chosen one. And you
and
said that
I
and in my mind. I'm like,
thinking,
but are you sure? Because she writes the book.
I know. And it's a weird back and forth that I continuously have with myself. She checks a lot of the boxes, but I don't know. Like, anyone could do this. Literally, they gave everybody the pieces of the puzzle. So anybody could theoretically get it. I don't know.
It just depends on how much someone believes in fate.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Because you would assume that other people are trying the same things as her. And she was chosen because she's the best.
She just has the capability, the gift of language to unlock it.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, the very last scene. You have Louise and Ian kind of talking and whatever. And you never see Ian's face. And it's because he doesn't know that he's eventually going to have a child with this woman. And that he eventually suffers the same fate as her. Of their unborn daughter who eventually dies, and he's just completely in the dark, and it's just such a lovely visual representation of how he doesn't know. You don't get to see his face, you don't get to connect with him, and it's solely Louise, and you get to see her reactions and her thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She's privy.
Mm-hmm.
He's not.
Mm-hmm. Editing.
Editing. So yeah, I mean, I feel like it's almost, you know, what is it, kicking the dead horse, but the obvious brilliance of the editing in this film comes in the form of using imagery to splice together the nonlinear storytelling. The timing of the flash forwards come at such just a perfect time to make us believe that they're flashbacks, and it's seamless. The visual storytelling and the flow of time in this film makes for a quick watch, despite it being such a dialogue heavy, at times dreamlike film,
mm-hmm.
literally, like she is experiencing it, like it's dreamlike.
Mm-hmm.
And there really isn't anything negative or critical that I can say about the editing aspect, other than editing in this film more than in others needed to be perfect.
Oh yeah.
And it,
you had to hit the notes just right.
Yeah. I mean, it was impeccable
because you're flashing forward and backward at crucial moments, yeah. And you're, that's how she's connecting dots. It's how she's basically evolving to a degree and figuring out how to use her gift.
Right. Absolutely.
I don't know if we needed the shots of her leaving the school after the breaking news. I guess seeing later shots, it kind of shows you how the different countries are responding.
That's exactly what I thought, was this isn't so much her, this is...
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's just, you know, because you see the jets fly by twice, yeah. And it's just, I don't know. I feel like maybe they could have... It was there for a reason, and I needed less of the panic, or I didn't care as much about the panic of students.
Maybe it was more about how is Louise responding while everyone panics around her.
And she's calm as fuck.
Exactly.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I like how we don't... I love how we don't get to see how the very first session goes. They just cut to her like, oh, fuck, I hope I'm not getting fired. I loved it. I love when you don't get to see everything because, I mean, that's comedic. That's really good timing.
Yeah.
I have never taken a countdown on a bomb so seriously before. The cutting back and forth between the timer counting down and like Louise and Ian just talking to Abbott and Costello. Like, I don't think a countdown's ever made me so tense.
I have so much to say about that scene in a little bit. So much to say.
Then I won't get further into it. That's basically the note on editing. That's so well done.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, like that's just one of the best parts of editing, yeah. I think. And it's not even like a flash forward, flashback combination to it. It's literally just a moment.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sounds done.
So yeah, music composing, sound design, we threw in a little bit of difference this week. You okay?
Yeah, I'm cold.
She just did like a full body weird thing and then spaced.
I was listening to you. I was panicking thinking
a little bit. So we very specifically are throwing sound design and mixing into the notes this week. Even though we've made mention of some spectacular sound on a few films before, we just absolutely cannot go without mention this time around. Sound is such an integral part of this film. The sounds of the aliens and their language are imperative to the mood, the intrigue, and the story. Language and bonding with one another is a way to unlock a gift is the main theme of the film, and the sound is so important to the fabric of it. And just, holy shit, can we just, how intense the sound is when Louise is talking with Costello?
Mm-hmm.
The sound of that scene alone, like, they deserved their Oscar for just that scene. Like, the whole movie, but whew, I don't think my body is supposed to sustain goosebumps for that long without pause. You know, and even the music in the film
is... Which kind of intertwines with how they speak as well.
Yes.
Like, that's like...
God damn it. Sorry. I never get really, like, I never really have super passionate notes about music.
Neither one of us do, because it's
which
not...
Which is fine, which,
like,
is
we don't
good.
Know a lot about it to a degree.
That's
so.
True. You're absolutely right. The music in this movie is glorious. I notice the music in this movie, which I usually say is a negative thing, because I feel like if I notice it too much, it's distracting, mm-hmm. unless it's, you know, supposed to be noticed. This is one of those rare instances when I notice it because it's beautiful, it's emotionally intertwined within the scenes, and within Louise's journey, it's easier to be swept away with her because of the soundtrack. And especially in the end when we see kind of like the montage of the family together, once you realize that Ian's like, just fuck that violin track so hard. It makes me want to scream with how much, like, it's that violin with the scenes of them. It does that thing where it feels like something is being pulled taut in my throat. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, the tears are coming and it burns and kinda. It's just... The music is amazing. So just the sound design and the music of this film, it drives me insane.
Well, yeah, you got the sound design and the music, and it's just so integrated, because you have how the aliens speak, and then you have these musical notes that sound so similar during key moments, and it's just kind of welding the two together, basically.
So I didn't put this down, but... I don't have it from Johan Johansson, I mm-hmm. think. Yeah. So he started composing before the movie started filming, because apparently he and Denis Villeneuve liked to work on the soundtrack during the filming process. Mm. I read that a couple of times, and it's just, I bless them both for that, because it just makes it so much more intimate and special and ingrained. And I feel like you can tell.
And we got that too with Joker, where it was completely yes. done beforehand. And I wonder why. I'd be curious to see how many other films do that.
Sure. Yeah.
And why more don't necessarily. I mean, it depends on how many are doing it and aren't doing it. So it's just, it seems to be interesting.
Beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I would argue that it's a hard thing to do.
Yes, that's probably why. Just in vivo creation. Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed when they're on the helicopter, and then when Louise is in the shell, and you have just have the distortion, but it's like you yourself have headsets on the helicopter, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, that was really well done.
I wish we had a surround sound system.
This movie might be worth getting a surround sound system.
Yeah.
New life goal.
Yeah.
Watch Arrival with a surround sound system.
Because you know that my memory is shit, but just being in the theater.
Yeah.
Was probably just... I can't. Words are failing me. I'm so overwhelmingly excited about this movie right now. This movie is so good. And I just, the design of... And I don't think it was anything new, because no one knows what things outside of our world sound like.
Right.
But it was just... It seemed appropriate, the design of how they spoke.
Right.
Or just, like, the sounds that they emitted seemed appropriate for their shape and size.
Yeah.
Even though they don't even have, like, a mouth, we have no idea how they're actually communicating. We have no idea where the sound's coming from. It's just super interesting.
Yeah.
Performanted?
Showa.
Or did you have more on...
No.
Okay.
I feel like mine's going to be shorter here, so I'll start. I don't know about that. I have one thing to say about Amy Adams in this role in this film. And it's going to sound like two things, but it's one thing. The fact that she wasn't nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actress for this role is a goddamn travesty of justice.
She's been nominated, what, 7 or 9 times?
So many times. She's the Leo DiCaprio of Best Actress. Seriously. And not only should she have been nominated, but she should have fucking won. And I will say this one time. Emma Stone. Won for her role in La La Land. And no offense. Mm-mm. Everything about this situation is a goddamn joke. Yeah. Amy Adams was flawless.
We need the gif of Ryan Gosling at the awards.
Oh, with the whole fuck up with, yep, yes we do. Where is he? Amy Adams was flawless. I quite literally cannot find the words to give her enough praise for it. And that is my note.
I have 3 things to say, though one is not written, and I had already told you about it the other day. My first note, her performance speaks for itself. I forget that I'm watching someone act, mm-hmm. and I'm not just watching someone live their lives. Mm-hmm. Third.
We know that's the bar, man. We know that's our bar.
Third, Meryl fucking Streep. Is nothing but high praise for Amy Adams. Mm-hmm. She's worked with Amy twice on movies and is just has nothing but good things to say. And this is someone who's won how many awards?
Like everyone.
I'm pretty sure Meryl is quoted saying that Amy Adams is the actor of her generation, mm-hmm. which says so much. She's my favorite actress.
I'm pretty sure every time someone wins an Academy Award, Meryl wins it too. I think that's how the system works.
Best director. Meryl.
Yeah. Like special mention. All right, because you made me say this earlier, but I'm still going to read my note about Jeremy, okay? What? You took it from me.
What?
I fucking love Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, I know you do.
So partially because, yes, he does play Clint Barton, but also because he's Jeremy Renner. And I happen to think that he's a spectacular actor. This is one of my favorite roles of his to date, and probably because it's very different than the majority of his other roles. It's quieter. It's more reliant on facial expressions, subdued body language, rather than straight up dialogue and physical action. And I think he builds the character of Ian so well and so believably that I'm endeared to the character rather than to Jeremy really early on. Yeah. I'm giddy to have read that Amy suggested him for the role. And two, I'm really giddy to know that he was happy and chill to support her in a way that suggested that he knew this was her role, her film, and he was like kind of along for the ride to support her. Like, mm-hmm. I like that. Everything about his performance in this warms my heart, solidifies him as an actor worthy of praise for his ability to perform in dramatic roles. And he's hella cute in those glasses, so thank you for coming to my Jeremy Renner Appreciation TED Talk.
I think he does a really good job breaking up the tension with some lightheartedness, even though for you he's the source of heartache. He's definitely the balance that we need, just, you know, as a character and as a performer to what Amy does. And kind of what you said, he does a lot of acting with just his body. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's nice and a little nuanced.
Mm-hmm. Nuanced is a good word for it. Yeah.
One note about Forrest. Yeah. I don't know what you... Oh, you've got more notes. Shit. I just have a note about...
Go for it, yeah.
Just, just again, as like as a character and as a performer, he's a really good anchor to the realism that is this kind of outlandish sci-fi movie.
Sure. Mm. Can Forrest Whitaker not kick ass in any role he plays because he's amazing? This role, if placed in the wrong hands, could have changed the tone of the film drastically. Mm-hmm. And I always love when that's the case with a relatively minor role. Mm-hmm. You know, sure, of course, this would be very different if Ian were played by someone different, if Louise were played by someone different. But his role specifically, you called him an anchor. And I think that's a really good way to describe it. Whitaker plays the Colonel as sternly as he has to without going too overboard into an authoritarian asshole who we would despise. He's level-headed, he's human, he's relatable, but commanding. And I really adore Forrest Whitaker, and I'm glad that he's there among the cast, and I'm glad that he's there to be in the space that he occupies. I think that it's just a very pivotal role. And
can he be our president?
Oh my God. Fucking Eureka. Yes.
Sorry, that just like popped into my head.
Who would be VP? Forrest Whitaker and Laverne Cox. That's my ticket.
Okay.
That's who I'm voting for.
I'll think about it.
Yes. That is my fucking Forrest Whitaker and a woman of color for fucking VP. That's all I want in life. Thank you for that idea. It's a little late to campaign.
Anyway.
Yeah, Michael Stuhlbarg, you don't have anything for him, but
no,
I just...
he's a wonderful actor.
I had to include him in my notes because we had such a year with this dude.
Oh, yeah.
He's so understated in this film. Like I said earlier, low-key hilarious.
Yeah.
He's
great timing.
He's just having the worst and longest days of all time in this movie.
You lost your fucking phone.
I love him. Stuhlbarg can do no wrong in any role.
And each role that we saw him in that year was completely different.
Because he was in Shape of Water, which is, you know, crucify me all you like. I didn't like that movie. I didn't like it very much, but he was great.
Yeah.
Call Me By Your Name was a phenomenal movie, and he was just the highlight of that film for me, even though he was barely in it, I feel. He's wonderful. I'm happy to see his face wherever he is, and I was happy
and
to see him here.
That year, we were like, who is this motherfucker, and how do we watch more of his shit?
Yep, absolutely.
Which we didn't do, and need to do.
Yeah, that's still on the to-do list, so. Let's get into this before we get into our favorite and least favorite parts.
Say your bit first.
Okay. So the first time we watched this movie, I was pregnant with our kid. The last time we just watched, we have a kid who's now almost three.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time we watched it, I cried so hard at the end of the film, I was pretty sure I was going to die. Mm-hmm. The last time... upon the first one, I immediately burst into tears within the first 30 seconds and basically cried on and off the entire time. Even when we watched it this last time on like 1.5 speed, it was just like intermittent crying.
Yeah, this first rewatch, you were like gasping a lot. Just like out of like awe.
Yeah.
Half the time.
And I just, you know my feelings about this. I'm interested in yours. Can we talk about Louise's decision to still marry Ian and have Hannah, knowing that she was going to die in what seems to be like her early adolescence, you know, can't be older than like 13, 14.
I think the actress is credited as 12-year-old Hannah.
12, okay. And Louise's decision to do so apparently without informing Ian, that she was aware that Hannah was going to die, you know, be born, die, things like that. I want to know what your stance is. And I just wanted to see if we could have a lively little debate about that.
I don't think that you're wrong on your stance that you will eventually say. And so I was kind of waiting for you to say it for my counter.
So.
Like, you're right. Everything you're about to say is.
So I don't know exactly what I'm about to say because it's been a couple days.
Since we last spoke.
In her position, I don't think I would make the same choice that she does. I love my kid.
What?
I know, right? I have lost people in my life that I loved. And, you know, you don't have control over that. Even imagining the loss of my child makes me kind of just want to disappear into a hole in the ground. I wouldn't trade a moment of time that I've had with him. But if I had never met him, if I hadn't known him, and someone kind of gave me a peek and showed me and was like, yep, this is going to happen. You're going to get 12 years with them and then they're going to die. Your call, up to you, etc. One, I don't know that I'm strong enough to go through with that. Two, if I did make the decision because, you know, that amount of joy would be pretty intense, right? And giving the opportunity, you know, giving someone the opportunity to live life, no matter how short, that's pretty extreme. So that I would debate. What I would not debate is, you know, let's use us for an example. I would fucking tell you.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a discussion we would have. They're dancing in the living room. And he says, you know, do you want to make a baby? And she says, yes. I don't even think I'd let it get to that point. Dead honest, like she hugs him and she says the line, I forgot what it was like to be held by you, something along those lines.
What it was like.
Yeah, and I would tell you everything, even if you thought I was fucking crazy. When he says that, I would be like, look, here's what I know. I write this book, so like he has to have some idea about the gift. Like,
yeah, I don't think it's a matter of not believing her.
Absolutely. We're going to have a child, and our child's going to die when she's 12 years old. Do you still want to do this? The fact that she doesn't tell him and she knows what he's going to go through, I think is unforgivable.
Do we know when she tells him? I assume it's after Hannah's born, but do we know?
I assume that it's when she's the age that they have the scene by the lake. When Hannah says, Daddy looks at me different now.
Okay.
And she says, yeah. That's my fault. I told him something he wasn't ready to hear.
That makes sense, yeah.
About that has to do with a rare disease. Like, I assume that's when she finds out. And she has to be, you know, anywhere between 6 and 8 years old. I forget what the credits say.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I think that that is, put yourself in that position. I think she's a fucking monster.
No, no, you do. That doesn't change.
Sorry, I'm like,
I know.
You can feel, you have tears in your eyes. I have, because it's a really, you know, we have a kid and I feel like having a kid and watching this movie and really thinking about the implication is really fucking intense.
I also can't hear you cry without like tearing.
Sorry, I'm like, really impressed with myself because my throat is tight. The tears are like, they're not falling. They're there, but they're not falling.
Mm-hmm.
But
no, so, you know, you're not wrong. I'm not disagreeing with you, but what I failed or couldn't put into words was basically something that I was able to find, and just as another viewpoint, basically. I forget the website. It's sourced. Cool. I don't even know how to say
we'll put it in the show notes.
I don't know how to say it. It's a question website. Quora?
Is it Quora or Quora?
Quora?
Yeah, Quora.com.
Quora.com. A user, to quote, I am reminded of Tennyson's unbelievably famous lines that it is better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all. As you roll your eyes.
Because I knew, because that's kind of what I was saying in the beginning. Like, that's the, see, I'm not arguing that with you. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Exactly.
What I would do.
I feel like I would go through with it. I think, like you said, I think timing is everything, and you should be more forthright with your partner about this huge thing. But I think I'd still go through with it.
It makes me feel so bad for her.
Yeah.
Like, how do you make that choice?
Stop.
Sorry.
Stop it.
Welcome to a humor podcast where we're crying over the death of children.
The best dramas make you laugh and the best comedies make you cry.
This is not a comedy.
There's a little more to what he says, this individual says, just to get the whole quote out, I don't know. In other words, whilst Louise has seen her future outstretched before her in the internal present due to the particular way that the heptapods perceive time, this does not detract from the wonderful phenomenology of lived experience. She loved her daughter, even though she knew her daughter was going to be cruelly taken away from her. There's nothing too spooky about that. Bereaved parents don't claim that it would have been better to if their mm-hmm. child had never been born.
I mean, I get that. And that's what I said, you know, ultimately, that's not the choice that I judge her for.
Right. It's
because timing. Having a child is frustrating and fucking amazing. Her not telling Ian.
I feel like she was afraid that it wouldn't happen and she wouldn't get that time.
And that's the most selfish thing I can possibly imagine.
Wrong. You're not wrong.
I feel like there's this assumption that I hate, and that is because she's her mother. She gets
right.
the say.
Yeah.
And to me, that's horrible.
You're in a partnership.
Well, not only that, you're in a partnership, but thinking about us.
Yeah.
Sure. I grew our little monster in my body. That would be like me saying I'm more of his parent than you are. That being said, the fact that she didn't let him know.
Yeah. That's the argument. That's not even an argument.
Right.
That's the issue.
I almost feel like by that point, it would have been less cruel to just not say anything.
Yeah, it's an odd choice, but she's also human.
Oh, I get it. That I still, you know, I went through all of this and said, you know, I feel like she would have had to have said something.
Because I feel like because as you said, he has to at least know a little something about the gift.
Why not wait until after she'd passed? She says something. She knows how it's going to play out, right? Apparently.
I mean, if she ends up in the hospital, I feel like, our son ends up in the hospital. I know you have this prophetic power and be like, did you fucking know?
I feel like that
would have come up
everywhere. I hate it. I hate this dilemma. But I feel
and it's realistic.
But instead, you know, she's 6, 7 years old, whatever, and tells and makes the choice. She said, you know, if you could see your entire life laid out, would you change anything?
And he says no.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean she doesn't have to. So she knows. She knows if she doesn't make any changes to what she saw, correct?
Mm-hmm.
She knows how it's going to play out. So essentially she knows, yep, I'm going to tell him this. He's going to divorce me. She's going to have split up parents for the last 6 years of her life. She still does everything the same. I don't know.
Yeah.
This saying, I love her character, like everything that I said, she's a flawed human being. I think that this is a selfish and monstrous decision to not tell him. I think it's horrible.
And I wonder if it's just for drama.
I mean, it's a movie. It's a story. I understand it. That's what we're talking about is a story.
So it's just, I mean, I'm curious as to why.
It's probably really stupid of us to kind of try to relate it so hard to us as parents, because our life isn't a story. Our kid isn't a story.
There aren't aliens.
There aren't aliens. Yes, we don't know what's going to happen in the future. But just as mothers, I can't. Like, it's what she does to me is unforgivable. Unforgivable. Get out. So yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I know myself. I know how hard it would be. I love my kids so much. I probably still have him. Like, I know, you know that I'd probably make that choice.
Yeah,
too,
you would totally. Yeah,
I would. I'd tell you about it. Like, yeah, see, again, I say I would. Ultimately, that would have to be a choice that we would make together. And I think that by stripping him of making that choice with her,
mm-hmm.
I don't understand how she was okay with doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't. That's where I stand on that, and on that side
will.
Of the debate. So, I mean, yeah, our fucking bed is made. We lay in it. And so does he every morning at 5:30 when he wakes up and jumps in our bed.
He's been getting up at like
death.
7 lately.
Anyways, yeah, that just was heartbreaking. And that, God.
Good movie is good.
Good movie is good.
What's your favorite part?
Parenthood makes everything hard. And wonderful.
And hard.
And beautiful and hilarious. Parenthood makes everything funny. Sorry. Okay. My favorite part is non-zero sum game.
I could have guessed that.
Because I fucking knew it. So here's something to know. Jules is really good at figuring out twists in movies.
Yeah, wait till we talk about Interstellar.
That still should have been statistically impossible. When it came to the non-zero sum game scene in this film, you know, when Hannah's asking her in the flash forward, which we're presented to as a flashback, and she says, you know, you want science, go ask your father, et cetera, et cetera. And then a couple minutes later, we hear Jeremy Renner use the term, and she kind of quirks. She's just like, oh. And we're thinking that it's because she's reminded of her flashback.
Mm-hmm.
My bitch ass sitting in that movie theater, full body chills. And this is, it's not super long before, you know, before Abbott dies and we get the reveal from Costello, things like that. I was just like, holy shit, that hasn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was going to have an anxiety attack.
I vaguely remember like feeling you respond and react.
It clicked.
Yeah.
And that's what I mentioned earlier. Like Villeneuve does this thing where he lays out like breadcrumbs mm-hmm. for you to follow. Oh, yeah. And I'm sure people picked it up even way before I did.
Yeah, the picture.
Yes, the picture.
Mm-hmm. The little picture that Hannah draws mm-hmm. of the two of them and the canary.
Yeah, mommy and daddy and the animals or something like that. Mommy, daddy, and animals. Talk to animals. Yeah, and the canary. Yes, mm-hmm. that. Oh, so good.
Because they're not animals, so you're not like equating the aliens to mm-hmm. animals. So it's yeah.
But then you think about the canary and the mm-hmm. bird, and you're not piecing it. But
so subtle.
At that moment when he said non-zero sum game, I was like, oh my god, she hasn't even had this kid yet. She's seeing the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like that was my moment. The only reason I chose that as my favorite part was because I was really proud of myself for figuring it out before the reveal.
And before me.
And before you. Yeah, and before you, because I never do that. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to choose because there's so many moments. They're so good.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
You know how I said I have one word?
Yes.
Can you didn't guess it. Do you want to try again? It's not everything. That's not the word.
Play-Doh. No. I don't know. I almost put the little Play-Doh alien.
Amy.
Yeah.
It's Amy.
You did.
No. Just, I think about this actress and I think about this movie. I think about this movie. I think about this actress. This movie is Amy. But if I had to pick like a scene, it would be when she is giving her English lesson. I think when we were talking about it earlier, I realized, you know, how much I really love how she breaks it down, and you know, back to her performance, and all of their Jeremy's too, just kind of like memorizing their lines,
right?
And right. you know, really becoming these sort of scientists. The English lesson, as I will now dub it, of her breaking down the sentence "What is your purpose?"
Mm-hmm.
is great on so many levels. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, really so good. Much.
Okay, so here's where I get to least favorite part. I mentioned that I'd be talking about this earlier. My least favorite part of this movie is directly before the bomb goes off.
My least favorite part is Abbott dying.
So, yeah, kind of in tandem.
Yep.
I mean, directly before the bomb goes off. My least favorite part of this movie is Costello swims backward. And Abbott just starts flinging the language. He starts flinging the symbols.
He's, flinging mm-hmm. the piece of the puzzle.
The puzzle, yep. We see the confusion, the panic, the fear. Ian and Louise and Abbott, you know, they're trying to figure it out. Abbott knows what's going to happen, which is awful.
It's okay.
I knew I was going to cry during this stupid podcast episode. My body just like breaks out in goosebumps and my guts just like twist. And even though I know what's going to happen, you mentioned the word tension.
Yeah.
When the bomb's counting down. It's such an effective way to create tension and anxiety that it physically makes me feel like crawling out of my skin. Like I need for the bomb to go off because I just need the buildup to be over. And it's beautiful and I loathe it. Knowing that Abbott is killed in the blast makes me want to scream. And I think that's the thing, is it's like, okay, I know Abbott's about to be killed. I know these two are going to be okay. I need to stop seeing Abbott panic. I just need it to be over.
Oh, yeah, he's knocking.
Oh, my God. Yes. Sorry. Yeah, it's really bad.
It is. It's, yeah.
I hate it.
I do too. So basically, we hate the same thing.
Yeah.
Or at least favorite parts is basically the same thing.
Yeah, it's like, just, I hate that part so much, and I don't want to watch it, and I need it to end, even though I hate the result of it more than anything.
Yeah.
So we're sitting here literally crying over, like, in non-humanist, like, non-animal, non-living,
a thing real that doesn't even remotely exist.
Yeah. The power of storytelling and filmmaking.
Yeah. Whew. What do you rate it?
Do we need to?
Hold it up.
Both hands.
Both hands.
Double high five.
10.
10 out of 10.
10, 10, 10, yeah. 10, 10, 11.
Oh, this is Spinal Tap. yeah, this movie. This movie's amazing.
It was great.
Yeah. Movie's
making us emotional.
Yeah.
And it's something, it's a movie that we bring up a lot, much like you bring up Moonlight a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a movie that I want to share with everybody, and I want everybody to have this experience.
Right.
We need more movies like this, because it is a sci-fi movie, but it's also, I feel like it's
grounded in human experience.
Yeah.
I mean, it's grounded in love and grief, and...
And I think that's what a lot of sci-fi, or a fair amount of sci-fi, aspires to and just can't reach it.
Yeah.
I mean, I need to read more sci-fi, because I enjoy it so much, and I enjoy fantasy so much. Reading's just hard for me to do, attention-wise. But it's... Yeah. I don't know.
We're both just, like, emotionally drained now. That was, yeah. I'm assuming you wouldn't be here if you hadn't seen this film already, but if for some reason you haven't and you just listen to us because you know us and like us and want to support us, you should probably watch this movie.
Yeah, I mean, even having listened to this podcast mm-hmm. before watching it, you're still going to have an experience.
Absolutely.
And you're still going to, even though you know how it's being told,
it
doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it's still,
you have to experience it. So, what do we have for the fine folks next week for the movie that neither of us have seen yet?
Lighthouse.
Yes, we're finally watching Lighthouse. I've been waiting.
Yeah, it's an A24 film. We're huge, huge, huge fans of A24, which is a production studio.
Yeah, they've only really made one thing we've watched that I've disliked. And I disliked it hard.
You didn't care for the Scarlett Johansson movie where she's like a weird alien.
The skin one?
Yeah.
I
fell asleep during
that. It wasn't
that.
My favorite, but then I went back and rewatched the last half, right. Do you remember? And the ending was like really impressive to me.
That's true. I didn't rewatch it. I fell asleep
right
first round. So I should give it another try.
Yeah. A24 is super. I mean, no production company is perfect. You can't win all the time.
Mm-mm.
But
she's talking about The Witch?
Yeah, The Witch is, I mean, I hate that movie.
Well, we're going to watch it and we're going to cover it.
Yeah.
And we'll have discussions.
Mm-hmm. We're going to baa the whole time. anyway.
It's a beautiful film. But anyway.
It is a beautiful film. And very well acted. Yes, but we're going to watch Lighthouse, and I'm super, 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 super stoked. I've been excited about this one for a while.
We need to sit down and figure out the thing for what we're doing after the Lighthouse.
Ooh, I'm so excited for May, and we'll share more about that next week.
Yeah, hopefully we have it fucking figured out.
We will. We'll get there. What's your tea situation?
Oh, wait. Oh, no, it's gone.
So
there was a drop.
I have an update. Take a look at my cup.
Mm.
So it's my tea drop. My tea was delicious, but like I have a about a half inch or so of debris.
Which is so on the instructions, you're supposed to have a smidgen of sediment.
That's a bit more of a smidgen.
Yeah, because we did it wrong.
But totes worth it. That was really good. But anyways, my half inch of smidgen of debris is cold. Therefore, we will bid you adieu. No.
You're what's bad about this.
So bad at it. You can visit us at our website at screenteapodcast.com.
Or you can email us at thescreenteapodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/screenteapodcast.
Or find us on Twitter at screenteapod.
All right. Now. I mean to go cry myself to sleep.
Wait.
What?
Kevin Bless Arrival.
Oh, God, yes. Kevin Bless Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner in Arrival.
Yep.
Kevin Bless you all.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Wash your hands and stay inside.